We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Blue Wire.
Welcome back. This is the Big Blue Banter New York Giants football podcast. I'm Dan Schneier. Joined as always my co-host Nick Filato here to break down some New York Giants football for you during this time of the offseason with training camp on the way, but still a few weeks away. We decided we'd take a break from our team previews today and do a little fun exercise. Nick, for Big Blue View, broke down his version of the all-NFC East team, both on offense and defense. We're going to dive into that. I had a lot of fun doing those. Back during my days of 24/7 sports, when I strictly covered the Giants, I always found it fun to do the all-NFC East teams and see where the Giants shook out. The days I did it, the Giants were seemingly even worse than what they are now. I mean, the Giants roster looks good in my mind heading into this season, with the exception of some key spots that we've discussed in length, but the roster has never looked this good in the past when I did it, so not many Giants made my list. A lot of Giants made Nick's list. We'll see if I agree or disagree with those selections coming up. But before we do that, Nick, how was your 4th of July weekend, man?
It was fun, man. You know, just getting together with good people, having some brewskis. Well, not really beer, but, you know, whiskey.
Definitely did not have beer.
whiskey, I should say. Whiskey and diets. And it was a good time, though, you know. Whiskey, I didn't really get to see. I really didn't get to see the fire. I don't think I saw any fireworks, though.
Fireworks, first of all, here's a small take on fireworks because I don't want to devote too much time to it. I find them pretty overrated.
I think they're a little bit overrated as well.
Yeah. They're not that fun. They're not that cool. The best one I think I've seen was when, like, in San Diego, there was, like, something went wrong with the fireworks, or, like, the timing went off, and all of them went off at once. That was the coolest fireworks, the only good redeeming fireworks I think I've ever seen, and it was online on a video recorded.
So I actually grew up across the street from a festival that would happen every summer, okay. And they would always have fireworks to, like, you know, culminate the festival. So it would always, like, every year, they would do this twice a year in my hometown, which is, like, crazy to think about, the amount of money they probably dedicated to it, but it was always something to look forward to. But I would agree, it's more about the festival than it was about the fireworks, which was just the ending of it. But it was a huge, like, Italian festival kind of thing that my town would have, and it was really, really cool.
Nice. I think with fireworks, it's like, it's not only the town made ones that I'm not that big on, it's just like overall the idea. Like, I never thought it was that cool to, like, go out of state to Pennsylvania where they're legal and pick up a bunch, sneak them in your car, hope you don't get pulled over by the cops who are, like, waiting on the border. Is that you always heard those rumors, like, if you do it, the cops are waiting on the border to pull people over and arrest them for the fireworks they're bringing back. But, like, I just never found them that fun. I mean, also, you know, the JPP story obviously gave me my reservations. I was like, I don't want to JPP myself. I have no idea what I'm doing with these fireworks.
Oh, yeah. I was never one to light them off like that. But I don't even know if you heard, man, a goaltender for the Columbus Blue Jackets actually died in a fireworks accident this weekend.
God,
man,
that's terrible.
Horrendous, man.
That
just is a kid, you know?
That's awful. Fireworks are dangerous, but if you enjoy them, God bless. I saw a few fireworks on my way driving home. I actually had a long mini vacation, my first mini vacation since Vegas, and my only vacation basically since the pandemic, and before that even. I drove up to Massachusetts to hang out with one of my best friends from childhood, Ben Brosh. Shout out Benny Brosh. Check out his music on Spotify. Really good musician and coming up in this musician world. But it was him, his girlfriend, and it was supposed to be her friend Claire, who I was excited to meet, but it turned into a wild and wacky weekend because our plan was to go camping. I had never been camping in my life before, Nick. It was going to be my first time camping. You take a little Jew boy out of the suburbs, Dan Schneier, and you send him up into the woods in Massachusetts, or New Hampshire. We're driving to New Hampshire. But what ended up happening was, and going in, I was like, oh, I have no idea what I'm doing, but I'm excited to camp. I like nature. I like outdoors. We're planning a hike. There was a lake there. It was going to be a great time. It was summer. It was July 4th. And I had no idea what I was doing camping. So they're like, all you have to do is buy this one thing. We have everything else covered. So I'm like, good. That's great. This sounds like a great time. So we get up there and we start to look at the, and by the way, the whole entire summer, Nick, let me just say, the whole entire summer has been 95 degrees, sunny every day. I feel like it's been unbelievable weather, but maybe at times too hot. It's been a drought almost in some ways. I feel like we've almost had a drought. And yet for this one weekend, Nick, where we got the last camp, we felt so lucky to get the last campsite reserved. It was a good campsite. It was cool. This one weekend, man, it was brutal, dude.
Brutal.
3.5 inches of rain on Saturday. We were there. We were going to go. I drove up Wednesday night. We were going to go Thursday, Friday, Saturday. We gave up on Thursday because it was so rainy. We just gave up. We're like, all right, let's just hang out around here and do other things. Went there anyway on Friday in the morning. Got there, set up the tent, put up two pop-ups over the tent to try to like block the rain out. And Friday was raining the entire time. There wasn't an ounce of sun. I mean, like not even a little peek through of sun. There were times we could hang outside and it wasn't as rainy, but then Saturday brought an onslaught. So in the middle of this camping trip, I won't get too deep into this because it was mostly just drinking and game board games and card games within the tent. But at 1:45 a.m. on Saturday, the tent absolutely just, I wake up and inside the tent we had like a little like a pop-up table to put some like phones, whatever, lantern on, topples over. So I'm like, oh, is this all right? And like my friend Ben, like drunkenly, because we had gotten hammered that night, had drunkenly in his sleep, like, yeah, it's fine, it's fine. Next thing I know, Carlin, Ben's girlfriend, is like, the tent has collapsed on my face. We get up. It's leaking water on both sides. We realize a pole had snapped off the tent because the top pop-off was taking so much water on that the weight of the water, which we were dumping periodically during the day, but at night it was like a huge storm coming and just had collapsed it in on itself. So we had to emergency evacuate camp at 1:45 a.m. We had to pack up the entire tent, everything. That was an hour-long process in the pouring rain and then drive an hour and a half back. We got back to his apartment at 5 a.m. So it was a wild camping experience. Not my best first camping experience. Feel a little disappointed, but I still had a great time because I was a really good company. I mean, Ben, lifelong best friend of mine. Like, I literally enjoy spending any time with him. And his girlfriend, Carlin, is arguably one of the most wonderful people I've ever met. Just being in her presence at all times is great. And I feel like just hanging out with those two, I had a good time. Even though Claire didn't make it out, who we were expecting to, one of their friends. But it was wild, man. So I was driving back, and here was the redeeming part of the trip, though, Nick. So you'll like
this. I was going to say, this sounds like a camping story to me. Like, it was ruined by rain. It was horrendous. It was miserable. But, you know, it was actually kind of a good time.
It was kind of a good time. And on the way back, I was like, I'll break up my trip by going to get some of this famous New Haven pizza. So I don't know if you heard about this, but New Haven, Connecticut, supposed to have the best pizza in the country. Some people, like myself, were very skeptical of that, having grown up in the New Jersey, New York area. I've been to my favorite place in New York, in Brooklyn, actually, DeFara Pizza. I think it's the best slice of pizza. I thought it was the best slice of pizza. Oh. I'll get to that. But I've also, you know, even just like some of the simple things, like John's on Bleecker, another great spot in New York. And New Jersey has some great spots, too. We talked about Star Tavern on the last podcast. Angeloni's is really good in New Jersey. There's a lot of really good pizza, but I had to try this New Haven style. It's supposed to be different. It's supposed to be the best. So get there. My friend told me the best one, according to the mainstream, is Pepe's. But he said Sally's is actually the best. And then somebody else told me Modern Pizza is the best. So I had three options going in, Nick. Driving there, on my way back, trying to call Sally's for a pickup order, calling, busy, busy, busy. I finally get through to them, and it's like an hour past when my ETA was, so I'm like, gotta give up on this. Then Modern, not even picking up their phone. Like, I couldn't even get through them. Finally, when you get through, it was like, it went to like a voicemail where like, they're like, oh, you gotta type in an access code. I'm like, I don't have an access code to get pizza. So I gave up on Modern as well. And I was like, you know what, let me just go to Pepe, see what happens. They told me it was a 45-minute takeout, but maybe if I go in store. And so I waited online, got in store, got this pizza, man. And I gotta be honest, dude, I just got the regular tomato mozzarella pizza. That's how I judge pizza. I want to go plain. But obviously, I ordered it well done. And I gotta be honest, man, it lived up to the hype for me. This is, in my opinion, the best slice of pizza now I've ever had. And maybe it's specific to taste buds, Nick, because I think what makes it so good is that it's the coal fire. It's cooked in a coal fire, so it has that nice char and crunch to it, and the dough has that really good char and crunch. But it's a combo of that and then the sauce. The sauce has this incredible tang to it and just an absolutely excellent flavor to it. And I asked the waitress, like, what's the deal? Because like, I told her, like, this lived up to the hype. I think a lot of it is the char and the coal fire cooking, but it's the sauce, too. The sauce is unbelievable. She's like, yeah, the, anyone who works here has to sign an NDA. Or NDA.
NDA.
NDA, sorry, not
sounds
NDA.
Sounds like a hip-hop band. Yeah, NDNA.
NDNA. An NDA, sorry, to work here and not give away that sauce recipe. So, Pepe's, New Haven, unbelievable pizza. Nick, I brought some back and I stopped by and gave you some. Have you tried it yet? Do you plan to try it? Were you lying about trying it? Are you just trying to make the fans kind of feel better about you? What's the deal?
No. So I haven't tried it yet, but I've been really busy with work and I'm going to have I'm going to have at least a bite, maybe two.
You're going to have a minimum two bites? Is that the or minimum one, potentially two?
Yes.
What's the ceiling of bites for you? Will you eat a whole slice?
Probably not, but I'll indulge.
You won't eat a whole slice. But I'm going to say this. Whoever you're with then at the time, if you're not going to eat a whole slice, make sure that person eats the rest of that pizza. That pizza better not go in the garbage. That slice, only going to have a bite or two, the rest of that slice must be consumed.
I'm not a wasteful person, so I would ensure that whomever I live with.
Yeah, someone has to eat that pizza then because that can't go in the garbage. But you know what? After you get back to me, have your bite, have your two bites, whatever it may be. Let me know what you think of this pizza because I don't know if you're the best frame of reference for it since you don't regularly eat pizza. And by regularly, I mean you just don't eat it at all.
Yeah, I'd be a terrible frame of reference, to be honest.
But at the same time, you should know what tastes good. You should at some point in your life have enjoyed pizza. Like, I can't imagine 13 to 17 to 18-year-old Nick Filato was this obsessed
with health. No,
I can't imagine.
No. I was eating whatever I wanted.
You must have been eating pizza back in the day. So let me know what you think. But let's talk some Giants football now. Let's transition. Let's get away from the 4th of July weekend. It was a great time. And I did see some fireworks driving home, which was actually pretty cool, by the way. I'm not a huge fireworks guy, but I will say while driving into fireworks, not bad. Especially when you see all the different towns doing them. Probably select four different ones. But let's talk the NFC East, all NFC East team heading into 2021. We're going to start on the offensive side of the ball. Let's start at the quarterback position. Let's see if we have any differences. Go with your quarterback on the all NFC team. I feel like this one's going to be an obvious one.
Yeah, it's Daniel Jones. No, I'm just joking. It's Dak Prescott. Yeah, I mean, coming off the injury and everything, it's just everything that he showed last season. Dak Prescott's a legit quarterback, and I think you could probably take away the things that you saw for 2018, 2019 from Dak Prescott and still kind of come away with that. I think there was always this argument between, is it Carson Wentz or is it Dak Prescott? And it kind of flip-flopped because after 2017, it's like, oh, man, Carson Wentz. I mean, he had that MVP-type season, got injured. The Eagles went on and they won the Super Bowl. And then 2018, 2019, it kind of was a flip-flop. But I remember a buddy of mine, Michael Kist, who writes about the Eagles. He came out, I believe it was before last season or it might have been before 2019, wrote an article saying that Dak Prescott was the best quarterback in the division. And the Eagles fans just ate him alive. Like, how could you say that about Carson Wentz? And they just ate him, you know what I'm saying? But it turned out Kist was proven right because Dak Prescott was a much better quarterback in that specific situation than Carson Wentz. We'll see what Carson Wentz can do in Indianapolis. But just looking at everybody else in this division, you're talking about Ryan Fitzpatrick, Daniel Jones, and Jalen Hurts. I mean, there really isn't a competition. I think Dak Prescott's the easy one.
Yeah, no disagreement here for me. It's Dak Prescott as well for my all-NFC East quarterback. Prescott's such an interesting player for me because I was on the side of the debate at that time where I was on the Carson Wentz and it's not even close side of the bait. And what Prescott has taught me, I try to learn a lot and take away a lot from, you know, following this game and analyzing this game. And I'm always open to changing my opinions on things. And I never felt like Prescott could ever get to the level he got to. And he's really changed my opinion of how much a quarterback can improve at the next level. And Josh Allen is another example of someone who's really taken to well to coaching and improved as a player. Mm-hmm. But Josh Allen's so different than Prescott because Josh Allen might be the most naturally gifted arm talent, size, speed quarterback in the NFL. And if you're just taking away arm talent and adding in size, speed, all of those things, he might be even more gifted than Mahomes. He doesn't have Mahomes' arm talent in my mind from just like the touch and all those. And arm talent, obviously, I mean the ability to change trajectory, speed on the ball, touch, accuracy, ball placement. But when you factor in his velocity on those tight window throws and obviously his size and speed, Allen may be the most talented. And so Prescott is different than that because I don't really feel like he has a lot of natural arm talent, but he's done a lot of work with his lower body, his hips, his flexibility, getting drive from his base and from his core. And he's really improved his accuracy in a lot of ways. If you watch his film from that first season when the Giants went, I believe, 11-5 in 2016 and Dak won the division, he wasn't that good of a quarterback. He was missing throws regularly, and that was why I wasn't high on him at that point, and I was easily Wentz over Dak. His accuracy has really improved, which I didn't think was exactly possible, but Josh Allen's another example. And more importantly, he's just moved so fast forward when it comes to the mental processing. You look at some of the breakdowns that you've seen from guys who do all 22 breakdowns on Twitter, and they just show how good of a job Dak does right before the snap, key third down situations, diagnosing the blitz and diagnosing where he's going to get his best matchup, and then finding that matchup and throwing the football accurately there. So at this point, I don't even think it's a competition. Dak Prescott is by far and away the best quarterback in this division. And it's a good reason why, if you want to make a bet on the division, you can bet on the Cowboys, because you can look at all the things, the roster, the offensive line, the defensive line for all four of these teams. But in the end, football is mostly a sport about the quarterbacks, especially if there's a massive edge. And because the Cowboys have such a massive edge, they will be in the mix to win the division. And I can totally understand a team picking or a person picking them to win the division.
And the defense is going to be better as well with Dan Quinn there, as opposed to Mike Nolan last year, where it was just horrendous. Yes. So it's not something I'm looking forward to. Dallas potentially returning to the positive win rate team that can win this division. But let's hope the Giants can steal two of those wins and hopefully take over the Cowboys from winning that division, because that would suck, man.
Yeah,
I don't like the Cowboys.
No, and remember, the Giants beat the Cowboys last year. The Giants beat the Cowboys with Andy Dalton. People seem to keep forgetting. Everybody who talks about all this progress the Giants made last year seem to forget that four of the wins they had were against quarterbacks who won't be starting in 2021. Four of the six wins are against quarterbacks who will not be starting in 2021.
And that's why I say, we all expect the defense to kind of live up to the 2020. And I think the personnel's there, and I really trust Patrick Graham. There's a lot of things going for him, but it's not a given, bro.
No.
It's not a given. So we just have to keep that in our minds.
Yeah. And there's still a lot of progress to be made. They still have to beat Dak. So let's get to the running backs position, where you have two backs. And who were the two backs you went with that running back?
Honestly, I think I would maybe change this. It was so close for the second back. The first one I did go with Saquon Barkley coming off the injury. I don't really know if that's just homer. For me, it's just straight his home run ability, his big play ability. I definitely want him to be one of those two backs. And the next one, I'd probably change. And I could see myself flip-flopping by the day. But I ended up going with Miles Sanders because of his elusiveness. And because I think he could be a good third down back. I don't think he would be as good as Antonio Gibson, though, because I really, really trust Antonio Gibson. That's the one that I really, really struggle with. But Ezekiel Elliott, you also want to consider. But the way I constructed this roster was to build it like an actual team. So I wanted someone who could be more of a third down back. That's why I chose Saquon over Zeke. So I kind of just put Zeke to the side, and I was like, all right, between Antonio Gibson and Miles Sanders, who am I going to go with? I went with the dual Penn State backfield with Miles Sanders. But honestly, man, I have this affinity for Antonio Gibson that makes me kind of sort of regret it a little bit.
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think there's two ways to interpret. If you're doing an all NFC East team, I think it's different than if you're doing the best possible team using NFC East players.
Absolutely.
Because you're right. If you're doing the best possible team using NFC East player, or I'm sorry, not the best possible team, like the best possible actual team to win games, let's say, using NFC. Because then, I don't know if I want, and then I'm looking for like a third down type back to pair with a Barkley type. But if I'm just doing the best players, I would definitely put Ezekiel Elliott in there, Saquon and Zeke, because I still think Zeke, despite playing through an injury last year, and if he's healthy this year, he'll prove it again, is probably the best pure running back in this division, and I don't think it's really close as far as setting up his blocks, as far as accelerating in and out of between the tackles. Now, Saquon Barkley is the most talented running back in this division. Saquon Barkley has the most home run ability. I would take Saquon Barkley over Zeke in a heartbeat, because I think he can give you chunk plays, and that's what the game's all about. And I still think he has untapped potential as a receiver.
Especially in this offense with Jason Garrett, too. We were looking for explosive plays.
Need explosive plays.
You need explosive plays, and Saquon can deliver that.
But at the same time, if we're just talking pure runner, and that just means, between the tackles and what the old school, idea of what a running back would be, I still think it's Zeke. And for that reason, he'd be in there for me. If I'm just doing it the way you describe, looking for a third down passing down back, I'm going to take Gibson over Sanders as well. I don't really like Sanders on passing downs. I'm not as big on Sanders in general. I think he's got some home run ability. And I think he was held back a little bit by that offense for sure. But I never was a huge fan of him coming out of Penn State. And I just haven't seen it all put all together at this next level. He'd be four on the list for me, but I'd probably go Gibson if we're doing the best possible team to win games. But all NFCs for me would be Zeke still. And I still think Zeke is going to have a really good bounce back season.
Yeah, I think I would go Gibson if I were to rewrite it. But on this one, on that day when I wrote this, I went with Miles Sanders.
And I might even say honorable mention Tony Pollard. Tony Pollard is really freaking good. Like, if you look at some of the advanced stats, Tony Pollard had the best elusive rating in the NFL. He, on a per-touch basis, was one of the best running backs in the NFL, just from that standpoint. And I think he could be in the mix as well.
Yeah, if I went with like a third back that isn't a starting back for this team, then it would definitely be. Yeah. I don't even think anybody else would really rival it. I mean, J.D. McKissic is a nice little player, but to me, Tony Pollard is a much better running back than J.D. McKissic, who's a good receiver.
Right. Exactly. All right, let's go to the receivers. Who you got at the receivers?
So I broke this down. We have four wide receivers, and I just went with the good old lettered XZ slot and then a fourth receiver just to kind of fill the void. The X, I went with Kenny Golladay. I feel like he's more of that prototypical type X, best contested catch type of receiver. In probably the NFC East, there's another guy on this list who may be able to rival that, and that's the slot CD Lamb. I just put him in the slot just because the Cowboys were so effective using 3x1 sets with him as that number three receiver. Sadly, Darnay Holmes learned that. The Giants safeties learned that. It's going to be a problem for them, and I think Aaron Robinson hopefully could be somewhat of an answer, but CeeDee Lamb is so talented.
Yeah, he's not going to be an answer. He'll be a better answer.
A better answer. Darnay got picked on a little bit last year in the slot against CeeDee Lamb, but that's going to happen because Lamb has the potential to be one of the better receivers in the National Football League easily. And then for their Z, I went with another Cowboys receiver. Amari Cooper, one of the better route runners, just so refined and so quick with his feet and his hips and sinking his hips, getting in and out of breaks. I think he's just a really, really talented receiver that we somewhat forget about sometimes. It sucks that he's on the Dallas Cowboys. And then the fourth receiver, I went with Terry McLaurin because I think Terry McLaurin is one of the better intermediate type of route runners on those digs, on those horizontal crosses. And I think he's just underrated because he's been in somewhat of a bad situation since he entered the NFL. Playing with the Washington football team, I think him and Ryan Fitzpatrick could develop a nice rapport. They also added Dyami Brown to be the vertical threat. They added Curtis Samuel to be kind of that short around the line of scrimmage threat, and that really should open up some better throwing windows for Terry McLaurin in the middle of the field. And I think that's a really, really solid fourth receiver to have if this theoretical team was real.
Yeah, I think that just looking at it like this and going over this now, Washington's really done a really good job of adding talent to the mix at the skill positions. It's kind of been under the radar their offseason because the Giants get a lot of fanfare and, you know, even from the national media for what they did in the offseason. And I'm never big on winning in the offseason, especially free agency, but it does help and sometimes you have to do it. The Giants were one of those teams, but Washington low-key did that as well. As far as your receivers go, I have no qualms. I think every single one is the one I would go with here. I think the thing with Cooper is, we haven't really even seen a fully healthy Cooper in a long time. He's been playing through injuries for the past two or three seasons. Foot injuries, Liz Frank, which slows you down. If he ever gets back a fully healthy season, like gets an Ingram season like last year where he's just lucky with injuries, he's going to be one of the best receivers in the NFL because like you said, he can sink his hips. To me, he's like McLaurin's like the light version of him. And I think McLaurin's unbelievable for the same reason. I don't even think he's just an intermediate guy. I just think Washington had no quarterback to get him the ball deep because I think he can use his route running to win. Both of these guys are like Antonio Brown-esque in their ability to just, like you said, sink their hips, get in and out of their breaks so smoothly, so quickly, creating separation with ease against any corner. And so I love both of these players. It's a stacked, loaded wide receiver cast when you consider Lamb and Golladay as well. I don't think if they keep Lamb in the slot, and they probably will with Gallup there, I don't think anyone's going to match up against him this year. Aaron Robinson, good pick, third round pick. He's not matching up with CeeDee Lamb in the slot. Like, he could do better job than Holmes because Holmes got totally destroyed there, but he's not going to do that much better. And most of the time anyway, as far as the numbers go and the stats, if you look at the advanced stats, Lamb was facing zone coverage anyway in the slot. So it's not like you're going to see too many man matchups. The Giants may try it. I'm not sure if they even will. It's probably not a good idea. I don't really think any slot corner can match up in man against Lamb, but we'll see. We'll see how teams play it. But yeah, I like this wide receiver group a lot. Let's move on to the tight ends. But before we do that, let's take a quick break to hear a word from our sponsors.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
All right, let's talk about the tight ends. Who do you have on your list for your all NFC East team tight ends?
Yeah, so Dallas doesn't really have like any like potent tight ends, so I kind of just didn't really consider them because you got the Dalton Schultz and the Blake Jarwins of the world. Now, if they got Kyle Pitts, that'd be a totally different story. And then you have Pro Bowler Evan Engram, but I did not select him. So I went with two tight ends, and then in the end of the article, I was like, if this theoretical team is going to run a 13 personnel package, I put Kyle Rudolph as that third. But he didn't necessarily make this list. The two that made the list were Dallas Goedert and Logan Thomas, both more receiving type of tight ends. But I believe that just because there aren't really any great blocking tight ends within this division, I went in this direction because I think you can really spread the team out and get them in the slot. Both those guys are really, really good in space, especially Logan Thomas, who was a former quarterback, transitioned to tight end with the Arizona Cardinals, and he had a really, really good year this past season. I'm not sure how many targets he's going to see this year with all the new additions that the Washington football team added, but I wanted to kind of just go with both of these guys because I think they have a lot of capabilities. They're big bodies. They can get in the way. They're not great blockers, but there aren't a lot of great blockers at the tight end position anyway. That's why the tight end position is so difficult to begin with. So I went with these two over someone like an Evan Engram just because I feel like they're much more efficient than Evan.
Yeah, tight end's another position on your list I have no qualms with. It's my exact two that I would go with. I think Dallas Goedert is the clear 1-1. In this division, I think he's by far and away the best receiving tight end. And like you said, we don't need to talk about two-way tight ends because there really aren't any in this division. Rudolph is kind of quote-unquote a two-way tight end, but in my mind, not really. I think his blocking is a bit overrated from everything I've started reading and looking into. He's become a better blocker. Last year was his best blocking season with Minnesota. He started to finally click and get it, but he was never a great blocker for the majority of his career. So I don't see any true two-way tight ends in this division, but Goddard is by far and away, in my opinion, the best receiving tight end in this division. He's smooth with his route running. And honestly, last year, there was a lot of yards left on the field that he should have had, but Carson Wentz did a really poor job of getting him the football on time, over the top. And I think this year, especially if they do go ahead and trade Zach Ertz to Buffalo, and by the way, I wouldn't put Ertz on this list because I don't think Ertz is that good of a tight end. I was never a huge Ertz fan. I thought he was a solid, pretty solid route runner, but I thought most of his fanfare came from just the fact that he had seasons where he had like 160 targets, which is the only option in the offense. And a lot of those were like quick hitting 6-yard stuff that I just don't find that good. And I've never been an Ertz fan, so I wouldn't put him on the list, even if he stays with the Eagles, but I go Goddard and then I go Logan Thomas. I think you're right. The regression is coming. I wouldn't target Thomas in fantasy, even though I like everything he's done. Like, he came in as a quarterback. They're like, you're going to have to convert to tight end. It's your only chance. That's hard to do. You convert to a whole new position where you're playing quarterback, and yet I think he sees the field well because he played quarterback. He's got a huge body. He's great in the red zone. He's a pretty smooth mover for his size. He's a big boy, I think 6'6". And so I like him as a prospect still growing and playing, but I feel like with all the weapons they added, he's a trap in fantasy, if you will. So I'm with you there. Let's move on to the offensive line where we might finally get some disagreements because I don't think we've had any disagreements besides running back so far.
Yeah. So the offensive line, so we start with the tackles, and both these guys have been injured a lot of their careers. Not really as much Lane Johnson, who is the right tackle, but the left tackle has really been dinged up. But when he's healthy, he's one of the best tackles in the league, and that's Tyron Smith, Dallas Cowboys. I went with him on the left side, Lane Johnson on the right side, and I feel just from an overall upside and skill set standpoint, they are clearly the two best tackles in the league, I mean in the NFC East, but it's just a little bit hard to kind of put them out there because Tyron Smith gets injured. Lane Johnson dealt with a lot of injuries last year. But if you just watch Lane Johnson, he just looks different out there, man. He's so big, like his legs and his butt like are just so gigantic, and he just generates so much power through it. He's one of my favorite, probably.
We could clip that out of context, and
it
could go bad.
Drop it. But he's one of my favorite right tackles to watch. To be honest, every time I watch in the All-22 when he's going up against it, like he does such a good job sealing the edge, getting up to the second level, locating in space. He's phenomenal offensive lineman that was drafted, I think, fourth overall out of Oklahoma. So those would be my two tackles, and I think it's I think that's the duo right there.
Yeah, Lane was actually like the first of that new breed Oklahoma offensive lineman. Oklahoma wasn't producing many big name offensive linemen.
Trent Williams
yeah. as well, but that was kind of in between them. There wasn't much there coming out of that offensive line. Now you got the Creed Humphreys. Now you're starting to get Ford, the kid who Buffalo got, who's pretty good, Cody Ford. And so these are the picks. These are my picks as well: Tyron Smith and Lane Johnson. I have more confidence in Lane Johnson right now than I do Tyron Smith, and I think this is going to lead to my overall bigger discussion on the position. Tyron Smith's entering his age 30 season, but
which is insane
because he feels like he's played forever.
Yeah.
But he also has dealing with a lot of different injuries than Lane Johnson. So I feel more confident about Lane despite him entering his age 31 season because his injuries haven't been the same kind. They haven't been the reoccurring ones. Tyron Smith has a back injury that keeps popping up for him. And I don't know if that's just going to go away. There's been times I've read articles like this is something that he thinks will be with him the rest of his career. He didn't get surgery on it, can't get surgery on a back. It's not something you want to do. So I think it really shows that these guys are entering age 30 and age 31 seasons that a changing of the guard could be coming at tackle. There is room for growth for a player like you put Andrew Thomas as your swing offensive lineman here. We'll leave a little spoiler there. Or, anyone who comes up within the division, a young offensive lineman, because these guys are getting older. Tyron, I think some Cowboys fans are like, it doesn't matter that he's only entering age 30. This guy's not someone who's going to play like Andrew Whitworth style, age 37, age 38, because Whitworth never had major injuries. Back is bad. Like, the back reoccurring for Tyron is bad. I think Lane is a little bit different, his injuries. So I think Lane comes back this year, even age 31, is once again what you just said, one of the most dominant, if not the most dominant, right tackles in the NFL. But Tyron, I feel like the page could be turning here, and I feel like the Cowboys themselves might know that.
And that's the problematic part about putting him on the list, because I did this, I compiled this list for next season. This is going into 2021, not just of what they did in the past. So there's some upside swings on this list, if you will. And Tyron Smith is not that, because the upside swing is, yes, he's very talented, but there's huge downside in the fact that he just gets hurt way too often.
That's the thing, the upside's there because, like, if he stays healthy, he's going to be the best tackle in the division, I think.
Yes, but, like,
it's just a huge floor ceiling, I think, is the better. Yeah.
I want to see how many offensive snaps. So he played 154 last year, but he did get to 882 the year before, 981 the year before that, 758 the year before. So he is he's not playing full complement of snaps. He hasn't done that, I think, since 2015. So he's always dinged up and hurt a little bit. But last season was just, abysmal because he only played two games.
Yep. Yeah. It's just been the reoccurring stuff. It's like you said, no full season since 2015. Just tread on the tire, starts to build up. Really, in some ways, hasn't even been that dominant player since 2015. It's still been great, but not that same elite best tackle in the NFL. But enough to be the best tackle in the division. Let's move on to your interior offensive line where we are going to find our first disagreement. So let's start with the guards and move on to the center.
Yeah, so the center is an interesting one. That's the upside pick that I was talking about. But we'll start with the guards. And I went with Zach Martin and Brennan Scherff, who I feel like are the duo at guards that need to be on this list. Zach Martin can play all over the offensive line. Since he came into the league in 2014, he's been a top five interior offensive lineman basically every single season. He got dinged up last year when he was kicked out to right tackle. Dallas, their offense last year was just decimated by injury, which is something that I feel like we may be overlooking as Giants fans. But they get a healthy Tyron Smith back, you get a healthy Zach Martin back, you get Dak Prescott back. I mean, that's a scary potent offense right there with all those weapons that we were talking about before. And Michael Gallup's not even on this list, and neither is Zeke. And then you have Tony Pollard. But anyways, Zach Martin has to be on this list as a left guard. And then at right guard, I went with Brennan Scherff, who's also coming out of Iowa, one of the best interior offensive linemen in the league that I feel like a lot of people don't talk about because he plays for Washington. But I feel like that's the easy guard right there. Do you want to weigh in on that before we get into the center?
Yeah, we could weigh in on this. I mean, this is spot on. There's if you're building an all NFC East team, you can't essentially go with any other guard besides maybe Brandon Brooks. So I do love Brandon Brooks from the Eagles. He's good, but he's not Brandon Scherff. Like
And he was injured. He came up with a bad injury from last year, too.
And he's older, too, and has dealt with injuries in the past. But these are the guys. Like, there shouldn't be much of a debate here in my mind. Then Scherff is a player the Giants have been interested in so many points. They wanted him in the draft, but Washington made a big decision to take an interior guy that high. Similar to the Nelson pick, Quentin Nelson by the Colts, it worked out. If you're going to make that swing, I think, with those interior guys, same thing with what the Jets did this year. They didn't take one in the top 10 like Washington or Indianapolis did, but at the same time, they traded up and they traded major capital to get Vera Tucker from USC. So he has to basically be Sheriff level, Quentin Nelson level in my mind to be worthy of that pick. And Sheriff is. And both Sheriff and Martin. Martin's the might be the best guard in the NFL as far as just like his ability to do anything. Like they kicked him out to tackle last year and he wasn't bad. Like he held his own at tackle. He could play tackle if they need him to. I bet if they needed to put him at center, he could play center as well. So he's, in my opinion, probably the best, the guard I would want the most of anyone in the NFL right now, Zach Martin.
Other than maybe Quentin Nelson.
Oh, yeah, other than Quentin Nelson. Yes. Because, yeah, I shouldn't. That was stupid. Obviously, Quentin Nelson's the 1-1, but. And Wyatt Teller's in the mix as well. You shouldn't discount what he's been able to do with Cleveland. But these two guys are not only two of the best guards in the NFC East, they're two of the best guards in the NFL. And so they're big boosts for both Washington and Dallas. But let's get to your center, because that's where we're going to have our first disagreement on the line.
Yeah, so I went with Nick Gates here. And again, this is for 2021, hoping that he takes another step forward in his progression with Rob Sale as his offensive line coach. And Jason Kelsey is the guy who definitely come to my mind. Chase, I don't even know how to say his last name.
Rouye,
yeah. I know he has the hockey thing, you know, going on. Chase Rouye, he's another one who I really, really consider, but I'm kind of banking on upside here with Nick Gates. Because last year, I mean, I've just been going through some offensive film. He was on the ground a lot last year, but there are plays, especially in space, bro. When he's kicked out into space, when they did the double pullers with the center and the play side guard, G lead type of plays, and he had to locate the safety coming downhill, a cornerback who was unblocked, he did, and he did really, really well on several different occasions. I was actually really surprised to see how many times he was able to do that. I think there are some athletic upsides to a player like Nick Gates, especially with his location skills out in space on screens and stuff like that. So I'm hoping he takes that next step, but I can easily hear any argument for Rouye or Jason Kelsey, because everything that they put together over the years, I believe they are the better centers right now. We're just hoping that Gates kind of takes that step forward.
Correct. Yeah, I like Gates a lot. I feel like we talked all last season about how high I was on Gates, how high you were. I mean, I would watch the All-22 each week. We'd come back, and I'd be like, this was the best offensive line based on the Giants that week, and I don't see much I don't like. He's helping in pass protection. He's always helping out. He's always looking for work. He's nasty at times. Like you said, at times he's really, really good in space. But I think the pick here for me is definitely Chase Rouye, who had a breakout 2020 season that led to a four-year, $40.5 million contract from Washington this offseason to reward him for his play. He allowed just 15 total pressures per PFF, was also excellent as a run blocker. I think it was this really steal of a pick by Washington. Got him out of Wyoming in the sixth round a few years back, I think 2015 or 2017, one of the two. Let me double check that just to get the exact year on him. Yeah, it was a 2017 draft. Pick 199 they stole him at. They were disciplined, they were patient with him, and he really, really developed in Scott Turner's system last year with a breakout season. I think going into 2021, still in Scott Turner's system, he's going to be an even better player. I think he has solidified himself in my mind as the best center in the division, but he will continue to be. But I also would put Jason Kelsey over Nick Gates. I still think Kelsey offers... He was once again one of the best run blocking centers in the NFL. He's not the pass blocker he used to be, Kelsey. He has injuries, but though he played a good amount of snaps last year. But he offers something that no one else in this division offers at the center position, and that's the ability to block in space and get to the second level. These guys can do it, like you said, Gates, Rouye as well. But no one can do it at his level because of his natural athleticism.
I feel like Gates is better at doing that when he's kicked out into space and not as much on those ace blocks, those combo and climb blocks, where he has to locate the linebacker. Sometimes he's a little bit slow to get off of that first initial transition with the guard, and by that time the linebacker has already kind of committed himself to his run fit, and it's a little bit more difficult for Gates to get that guy out of the way. Whereas Kelsey is much better in that specific situation, which is very, very important on inside zone duo type of runs.
Yeah, so maybe it's just that he's just so much better getting to the second level, and not just in Gates and really anyone in this division and most centers in the NFL. That's what made Kelsey what he is in the NFL. But he's older, so I can understand putting Gates over him. I still think for this 2021 season he'll be the better center than Gates. Time will tell. But I would go Rouye first for sure.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
And then your swing offensive lineman, you went with the tackle here. Who'd you go with?
I went with Andrew Thomas, and that's because I feel like Andrew Thomas, who is a tackle, I'm not saying he's not, but on this theoretical team, he could be moved inside and be a pretty dominant guard, a really, really strong type of guard, if something were to happen to one of the interior offensive lineman, but at the same time, I wanted to add a tackle because Tyron Smith is on the team, and I think Andrew Thomas does have some upside. I mean, I looked at Washington. I mean, they got Charles Leno. They drafted Samuel Cosmi. The other guy, Jerron Christensen, I think, is their other, or did they actually end up releasing him? No, Cornelius Lucas. Yeah, they ended up releasing the kid they drafted out of Louisville not that long ago, so I'm not really confident with Washington and what they have. I thought about Lyle Collins, even though he's coming off an injury. I think that's a really solid pick as well, something that I could hear arguments about. But since this is for 2021, hope the development of Andrew Thomas leads this decision to be the right decision by the end of the season.
Yeah, I'm going to go with Lyle Collins on this one. I think he'll be back and basically himself. He's already proven himself as one of the best tackles in the NFL in my mind, and Andrew Thomas hasn't gotten there just yet.
Nope.
Even over those last, you know, the game we talk about, that last second half of the season, I don't think at any point during that stretch he did anything. He had the same kind of production Lael had for, you know, a long period of time. And in a lot of ways, I kind of feel like they're similar prospects to me. They're both going to, in my mind, always be a little bit better in the run game than the pass game, which is not a bad thing, but just something to keep in mind. I would probably take Collins, but I can go with Thomas because that's more, it's an upside swing. Like, Thomas should be, at worst, the fourth best tackle in the division this year, I think.
Hopefully.
He should be at worst the fourth best tackle in the division. I mean, if you're taking someone at four overall in a tackle-loaded class like the 2020 draft was, he better be at least the fourth best tackle in his division by year two. But I think he should. So I can see that and get behind that.
You know what, though, man? I really passed up on a guy who has a lot of experience at tackle and at guard. And it really, really, you know, I'm just kicking myself for it, to be honest, man. That guy Eric Flowers plays for Washington.
Yeah.
You know
Eric Flowers out of Miami, yeah. There's a lot of hate coming in for Flowers. I've heard, I don't know, I don't watch enough Flowers film, but I've heard he's better now. I really don't know. I know you watched a little bit. Obviously, you didn't have time to watch it all.
So but I put, like, right after the last season, I put when he was playing for Washington, right. So it was based off 2019 film, not his 2020 film with Miami, because a lot of people were saying, yeah, man, he's a good guard. He's not. He's just a big body who's powerful, but he's still, he doesn't do well with his hands. His feet are still kind of a mess, only they're not exposed as much because he has a tackle to one side and a center to the other. He's still the same player, only his lack of skill set is better at guard than it is at tackle when he's in space.
I think that's fair, and I know you took some time to look into it and said that, and it makes sense. I mean, even with that qualifier, he's still probably not even that good in the role as a guard, because there's no way Miami would trade him if they felt like they got him 1 year into signing him for a contract. You don't trade a player if you believe in him or if you even liked watching the film that he had. They probably looked at his film and said, he's okay, he's serviceable, but he's not fitting what we even want to do from our blocking scheme, and we just would like to move on from him. And they did. They moved him back to Washington, which will be interesting because Washington feels like they got a decent buy there, I think. Helps them solidify a little bit of that offensive line. They also added Cosme, as you said, who's a prospect I kind of like. I feel like he's got smooth feet.
And they drafted Sadiq Charles, too, the kid out of LSU in the fourth round last year.
We liked him last year.
Yeah, long-armed kid, moves pretty well.
Saw the upside there. So they have some talent there for sure. I think you did a great job with this NFC, all NFC's team, Nick, on the offensive side of the ball. We're going to wrap up there with the offense, and we'll do another one on the defense shortly after this, which might drop a few days later, who knows. But thanks again for tuning in to Big Blue Banter Podcast. As usual, if you want to help us out, head to iTunes, leave us a rating and review. Head to Instagram, follow us, NYBigBlueBanter. And then lastly, please, please, please do us a favor and follow our YouTube page, Big Blue Banter. Type that in the search bar. We have some new reviews coming in on the iTunes. Leave us a review on when you rate us, and if you ask a question there, we'll answer it. We're going to answer those on the next pod when we break down the defense, the All-NFC's defense team. Until then, have a great rest of your week, and we'll talk to you soon.